So we're in the studio today with Ben Mala, who is a real estate tycoon.
I don't know about tycoon. Tycoon's a really big word.
Well, who's bigger? Who buys bigger? Who buys more in the area than you?
Man, I'm just like a little fish in a big pond. I'm like a goldfish trying to find some gold. I'm just happy to be like an individual person.
Yeah.
You know, where I compete with a lot of big, big shots. REITs, guys out of New York. You know, the only advantage I have is that I don't answer to anybody and they answer to a board of people. So that's the only edge I have is that I can get out there and do stuff they can't do quickly.
You started buying whatever it was, a house, and moved up.
I started picking up garbage.
In New York.
For a break on my rent. No, not in New York. I got kicked out of New York. And then Uncle Sam saved me. And then Uncle Sam took care of me for 5 years in the Army and then sent me to California. And that's where I got into real estate. And then there I rented an apartment and the landlord, the owner, gave me $100 off my rent. So instead of paying him $500 a month, I paid him $400 a month. And I picked up all the garbage around the building and around the pool every day.
Huh. Well, now that you're playing at the higher levels, as you've grown, basically bought and sold, you know, you use the 1031 to defer the taxes.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I kind of romanticize this as some giant rollover where you started with some amount of money and you've built it up into your what I think is around $200 million portfolio now. And is this the sort of the premise behind life for sales at some point when you finally cash this in and don't rebuy again, that there's a giant tax bill coming?
Basically, the only way you can win in a 1031 game is to die. And that's probably what's going to happen. Does that erase the capital gains? Well, what it does is it brings your, in this case, probably my spouse.
Yeah.
If, you know, which I'm sure she'll be around till I die because I ain't divorcing her. that'll cost me a fortune.
Yeah.
And she'll probably kill me before she'll divorce me. But, you know, basically when I die, then all of the properties will go up to what they call stepped up basis. So then she won't have all the tremendous gains and have to recapture all the deferred gains that I've deferred tax-wise. So it'll work out really great. So basically, I'm worth a lot more money dead than I am alive. So, you know, basically what the plan is right now is to start diversifying the portfolio and trying to shrink it down into larger, more trophy type assets. And most days I'm juggling 21 different deals, whether we're buying them, fixing them, selling them, refinancing them, repositioning them, whatever. I want to try to, you know, shorten the portfolio down to, you know, maybe half, at least 10 large deals. I was just out looking at a big shopping center yesterday for about 27 and a quarter million. You know, properties don't require so much management because I've never really wanted to grow more than a family business. I mean, I could have, but I didn't want to. I don't like partners. Just running our hotels and apartments alone, we have over 600 employees. So that's enough responsibility. In fact, I'm going to shrink that responsibility down.
With more commercial.
Yeah, more commercial assets. Retail's really actually a good time right now because retail's down. You know, the whole big Amazon scare and everything going on with that. There's really opportunity when stuff like that happens. That's when it's time to get in and buy, is when people are getting scared because they're selling off. That's why I'm looking at retail right now.
And you did a lot of that during the recession, right? That was a big opportunity for you.
I haven't done a lot of retail. I have a couple of retail plazas.
But buying in general.
Whenever the market's down, that's when you got to buy. I mean, right now, it's a very, very risky time to buy anything except retail. It's starting to pop up. Next year, you know, I predict, that's only a prediction, the market's going to go down. It's not going to crash, but it's going to go down at least 20%. Right now, things are way overpriced, and the numbers don't make sense on a lot of multifamily deals and a lot of hotel deals right now. There's just still a lot of people that made a lot of money and are trying to defer their taxable gains, so they're overpaying, as if I would, too, in some cases.
Because it's still cheaper to buy again at a higher price than pay the taxes on it.
It's better to reinvest the money in a new deal than just give it away back to the government, you know.
A lot of people think that there's supposed to be a 25% population increase in this area, specifically Tampa Bay, which a lot of people think will counteract that dip or at least lighten it up a little bit because more people keep flooding the area.
It is a hidden jewel of a spot to live in, and more people are finding out about it. But I haven't done a lot of homework on big companies coming here. That's what it would take. It would take big companies with a lot of employees coming here, but we'll see. See, the thing is, a lot of people are working from home right now. That's why I stay away from office properties. Office buildings scare me because a lot of people are working mobile, and that's a different animal. It's definitely the best area to live in I've ever found anywhere in the world, and I've been all over the world. But I don't know. I think we need a lot more services and railways and public transportation and a lot of infrastructure we don't have, which stops us from growing. That's the problem. And I see a lot of areas we could grow and we don't. So I don't know. You know, basically, I think we're overbuilt. I think we're overbuilding, and that's what's going to drive the price down. On a new product, we're definitely overbuilt. Whenever something works in this country or the interest rates are really low, people go overboard. That's the cycle. And then eventually we end up in a surplus. And then, you know, it's the old saying, supply and demand. There's too much supply and not enough demand. Prices are coming down. So what's going to happen is a lot of those A properties are going to turn into B properties.
You think we're overbuilt in the more affordable end of the spectrum too?
No, we're always at a desperate need for affordable housing. Affordable housing is always going to be a problem. I just purchased an affordable housing building right here, a few blocks from here. Beautiful building. It's only 68 apartments, but we probably have a waiting list a mile long. I mean, I specialize in affordable housing, and we definitely have a tremendous need for affordable housing, especially for seniors. You know, seniors can't compete with their fixed incomes on what people are trying to get for today's rents.
And you have at least one ALF, right?
No, I don't do ALFs. I do independent housing. We provide, you know, basic services for our residences, but we don't provide meals, you know, and any kind of medical or anything like that. It's independent living where we might take them to the grocery store and shopping a couple times a week in a bus and have parties and trips and things like that, just to, you know, for the quality of life. But I don't do ALFs. It's way too much responsibility, and you need some sort of medical licensing and background for that. Plus, you're running a restaurant in your apartment building. But dietary needs and things like that, oh, my God. The restaurant business is the hardest business to be in. I don't want to be in it. Food and beverage is really not a strong point.
Are you getting anything else besides real estate, or do you wish you have gotten anything else?
Well, you know, I own a company called Mustang Pool Tables. I
did not know that.
And it's where we have a license from Ford and GM where we make pool tables that resemble with real car parts, the Mustang, the Corvette, the different years of the Camaro. And we do like the old Corvette, the really cool ones back in 59 with the big chrome teeth. And so, you know, you might want to check out carpooltables.com. We've sold them to a lot of television shows. We ship them all over the world. Most of our business is in Dubai. They got so much money there. They buy them and
they ship in pieces or they ship in one big crate?
We have them crated in sections and parts. Okay. And then we coordinate with somebody over there to assemble it and put it together and deliver it wherever the nearest person is to their location. Not too long ago, Tommy Hilfiger bought one from us in Miami. We've shipped them to a lot of famous people, a lot of rich people all over the world.
How are people finding them? Do you have a marketing person on staff? Or
we were selling them on Frontgate, sold a lot of them for us. We try to market them at the car auctions and stuff, high-end car auctions. But if you just go to carpooltable.com, you'll see all kinds of stuff on them and choices. And we do Shelby's. And before he passed away, he signed a bunch of them for us. And so it's really cool product. But it doesn't, you know, it was just an idea. It was really just a hobby to turn into a real business.
And you helped Jimmy Hart with a place, right?
Jimmy Hart, we opened up a little bar for him in our hotel on Daytona Beach called Jimmy Hart's Hall of Fame Bar. In fact, he was here at my house last night. He had to go back. Jimmy Hart's a great guy. He's 74 years old and excellent condition shape and just the nicest guy you ever met.
And there's been a couple other wrestlers that have come in and out of the show, I believe.
I know some wrestlers because we used to own Hogan's Beach in Tampa. You know, I created that with Hulk Hogan and, you know, that went really well. But, you know, when the market got to be where a height, you know, it was really the hotel business I was in. You know, I had to sell, you know, because big shots out of Chicago came in and they wanted to buy the place. So, you know, everything's got a price. That's the biggest problem people have in real estate. You can't be emotionally attached to this stuff. The number's right. The number's right. You got to sell because next year you might not be able to. So you want to get out while the getting's good. And if you made a profit, don't cry. Even I don't mind. I leave money on the table all the time. I have people buy my properties and I resell them. I'm happy for them. God bless them.
Yeah.
You know, but I was happy because of what I bought it from and sold to them was a decent profit. I moved on to bigger and better things and everybody lives happily ever after. You know, so just the game you play.
In season 2, episode 2, you were looking at John's Pass. Where did that end up?
John's Pass, you know, it wasn't the right deal for me because, number one, like I said, there's too much money still out there. I didn't want to pay the price they wanted. Mm. I made them 18, a lower offer. They wanted like $18 million. Yeah. I think I would have paid them like $14. There was a lot of space there that I felt was very difficult to lease up.
Mm. Second floor stuff?
The second and the first floor even, you know, around the side. It was kind of weird shaped. I met with the people that ran the marina there and did all the fishing boats and everything. The docks need a lot of work. I have to come in and spend a lot of money on rebuilding the docks. The place needed some sprucing up. It needed some real TLC and love from an owner, which I can give it, but the numbers had to work. And in the garage, you know, there's no more casino boat there. The parking garage may not be doing as well as it could. I mean, it definitely was a turnaround project. You know, it had the ability to be turned around, but you need to pump capital into it. You need to put some elbow grease into it. And for that price, it just didn't seem like it was the best deal for me.
So you said the numbers have to work. Can you kind of walk me through your process when you go look at a property, you know, beyond sort of the obvious stuff? What makes up the numbers for you, and what are the intangible things that you're looking at? How do you decide?
I mean, you know, you got to find some value. You know, I look for value and upside, whether it's just putting some paint on it, whether it's remodeling construction that's going to bring us more rent. It's all about the rent you collected.
Right.
The property's only worth the return that you can get. So, you know, what can you do to this property to make it worth more money?
What's your target cap rate?
I mean, you know, typical cap rates, you know, you can buy in at a 7, but I like to see some potential to bring it up to an 8 at least. I was looking at a property. In fact, I went into contract in yesterday. You know, this is an out parcel that it could be built on. This is a vacant space that can be rented out. So that's going to be the cream on the cake, you know, right. The icing on the cake, cream in the coffee, icing on the cake. I mean, you know, you got to look for value in anything you buy, you know, whether it's apartment building, retail,
yeah.
Hotels. Hotels are great because you come in and the franchises typically want you to spend a few million bucks at least fixing it up with new furniture and fixing things up and modernizing them. And then typically you can raise the rate a little and it all works out.
So when you get into the bigger properties, I'm assuming there's not a huge pool of potential buyers, right? There's you and a few other people in the area.
There's a lot of buyers.
Even up at 20, 30 million.
There's $100 million deals going on all the time.
Sure.
It's just that you don't hear about them.
So you don't have a sense. Do you have a sense of who's looking and what the competition is and how fast you need to move and how aware you are of the other buyers?
If I find a deal, I got to move fast.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of competition out there. It comes from all over. To this area, everybody comes to Florida, New Yorkers, Chicago, everywhere, out of the country. We got people from Brazil out here with big money. You got people from Israel coming here with big money. Some guy from Arabia made me an offer today on 2 hotels in Orlando. There's money all over the world, and everybody looks at Florida because Florida is the place to be in this country. It's got the best weather. People are always coming here. It's not so much transit. It's transit with tourists. It's tourists, but people like to permanently live here. You know, this is a place for people to come and live the rest of their life.
And I'm assuming you'd be able to build up some advantages knowing the local brokers, local players.
The brokers are the key to it. Without the brokers, I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I wouldn't find a deal to save my life. You got to know all the brokers. You got to know all the guys that are moving to real estate, who the players are. You got to be in touch with all of them. And they know that I'll play ball. They know that I'm not going to make their life miserable. If I tell them I'm going to buy something, I'm going to move on. I'm going to show them hard money. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. That's the difference, the only edge I have on the bigger companies. These guys got to get approvals. They don't want to tie up money. They don't want to put money at risk because they're dealing with so many different people's money. They got to be really careful, you know? So I like the fact that I'm just a small family business.
And you only need approval from Danny.
Yeah, really. The day I ask for Danny's approval, that's the day that I'll be thinking about putting a gun to my head. In fact, I could put a gun to him. You sure you don't have a job for Danny? Come on, he can do something around here. He can clean your lenses.
Can you pitch for him?
He can clean the mics. You know, he can do testing on the mics.
What am I good at?
He can go out and get coffee for everybody.
Danny's making good videos. You know, I've watched his the Deckhands videos good. He's doing some good stuff.
Most of those people are dead, you know that.
Well, he captured them. I hope it's not an omen, but he captured them and for posterity.
You know, the poor lady down in Deckhands that he did, the poor lady, as bad as her life was, you know, she passed away. He didn't even go to the funeral. He doesn't care. That's the problem. He's just out here to use people. You know, he wants to make videos, but he's a user. And he capitalizes on people's misery and their hard work. He doesn't really do anything but film other people doing stuff. You know, and I don't really care for that he's a user. And
no, he's, I don't know.
He takes advantage of everybody.
I hear you. He's put together what you're on season 2.
All right, so I'm hostility against Danny for one day.
He's put together a whole season of videos. And he edits
Danny
some.
Danny is
and
Dennis the Menace in real life. You remember Dennis the Menace?
I do, yeah.
That's who Danny is. And I'm like the stupid neighbor next door that he's always harassing.
Yeah, except you go from season 1 to season 2 and now a podcast. You're listening to him.
I don't listen to this stuff.
It's happening though.
I got to make this stuff. I don't want to listen to it.
So what's it like? I mean, what's been the impact on your day-to-day with the YouTube stuff and
you know, it's nice that when I do business, I was with a broker last night.
Yeah.
You know, and we're in his office, and right away, you know, he tells me, oh, he watched the videos, he likes them.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's nice to entertain people. It's nice to bring some pleasure to people if they find it entertaining, because I grew up in New York. I grew up block off Broadway. I always wanted to be in that business, but I didn't want to be a starving actor. I didn't want to starve. So I like entertainment. I like to make people happy. And if it's interesting to them to know what I'm doing, then, you know, fine. Maybe they'll see something in it and want to do something themselves.
So I'm a big fan of Hunter S. Thompson, right?
Who?
Hunter S. Thompson. He's an author. He wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He was a Rolling Stone writer in the magazine for a number of years.
I'm not a reader. I only read contracts.
Yeah, well, there was a... That's a good thing to read. That's the Johnny Depp did a movie on him, and Bill Murray played him in a movie. And but the point was, he was, tell me, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing.
Yeah,
yeah. So
you're a liar.
He knows. I could see the burn. But Hunter had a big personality, right? He was known for his big personality, and people expected that of him, I guess is the best way to say it, trapped by it, right? And so, I mean, I'm assuming it was Danny's idea to do the, you know, lighting the cigars with the $100 bills and all that kind of stuff, right?
He argued with me because he wanted to use real $100 bills.
Yeah.
And he did, the idiot, with his own money, because I wasn't using mine.
And you tell me he's not dedicated.
So he burned through two $100 bills until he realized, okay, let's make copies.
All right, so that's a good story. You're saying two bad takes with real $100 bills, and then he made some copies. You tell me he's not dedicated.
I'm not stupid enough to burn $100 bills. I have respect for money. He has no respect for
all right,
money.
But yeah, but that's starting out every episode, right?
I leave it all up to him. You know, it's his project.
So the world knows you through Danny's eyes. That doesn't scare you?
I mean, anything related to Danny scares me. But, you know, it's fun. And, you know, we did a couple of episodes of Hoarders, too, which was a lot of fun. You know, I bought a palm building with three hoarders in it.
Right.
And the TV show came out and did this whole two episodes on it. And it was really cool. I enjoyed it. And it was great.
I read in, I think, a Times article from a few years back that you guys were looking at, you know, trying to pitch Life for Sale out.
Yeah, but none of the networks liked it. They don't like me, or they don't like Danny, or they don't like something. But we actually had some serious people write us contracts. Even a guy from Duck Dynasty tied us up in contract. We had a lot of big production companies tie us up, but no network wanted to write a check for it, basically, from what we've been told. And they pitched it all over, but they couldn't get it to fly. So we kind of just like...
got greenlit by somebody.
We just gave it up and said, you know, well,
but yeah, you started a season two. So is that more just a passion project at this point? Or are you still hoping? Obviously, you're still hoping, but
I wanted to quit. I didn't want to do it anymore.
He's such a liar.
I was kind of bored with it. I was trying to move on from Ben.
Ben begged you to do it? Is that what you're claiming?
He didn't beg me, but he had so many fans online that were contacting me, emailing me, messaging me, leaving comments, just like begging. Anytime I'd post it, like a documentary or any kind of interview, they would just comment and just beg for Ben. So that kind of...
Yeah. I had a guy from Germany show up at my house. Unannounced. Just got on a plane.
Just get a picture with the Lions and you?
He said he had a break from school. He was willing to come work for me and for free.
Huh.
And he just showed up. Flew all the way from Germany. And I told somebody to go to the front door and tell him he's out of his mind and have a nice day. I'm sorry. That's not the way you do stuff because I grew up in New York. I ain't trusting nobody. But, you know, a lot of people have given me a lot of compliments on it. But honestly, I don't think we actually put a lot of effort into it. That's the funny part about it.
Well, sometimes those are the best things, though, right? I mean, you can always polish and everything. But I think I've watched every episode and I've enjoyed them. So I'm, you know, and I don't have a lot of time.
Some of them were done professionally by a production company. I don't know if you ever let people see those.
None of them were done by anybody but me.
Guys from Chicago came down there. They filmed me. They went on planes with me.
Was that the ABC
everything.
One?
Those weren't online. That was the ABC one, yeah.
Yeah, ABC one. Okay. He's more like XYZ. They're ABC. But anyway, yeah, that's the deal, you know. We're out here willing and dealing, looking for the next deal.
So I'm going to get some more real estate knowledge from you because it's you know, fascinates me. You kind of told me what you look for in the numbers. You didn't tell me the secret stuff. What's the stuff that only you look for?
The secret stuff.
The secret stuff that only
you... want to know the secret stuff?
I need to know the secret
stuff. You want me to share my secrets with you?
Yes.
Nothing's a secret. It's all common sense.
That's it.
It's common sense. You find something that has value in it. If it's beat up, you fix it up. You know, if you're starting out with a house, you start out with a house, duplex, whatever. I started out with buying boarded up crack houses in Oakland, California, and fixing them up with less than reputable people in the neighborhood at Home Depot, whatever. We didn't even have a Home Depot. The neighborhood was so bad.
So let's look at it a different way then. So instead of knowing what to look for, what are the things that might look good on the surface, but that burn you sometimes? And I'll say that from the properties themselves. And then the second part of that would be, who are the people? You know, you say the brokers are key, and that's a good thing. And
brokers
are
key, but you can't depend on them. When you're buying a piece of property, you better do your homework.
Right.
I've been ripped off before. You can't trust anything. You got to verify everything. people will lie to you and cheat you, and people go to jail for it too. I know people that have. You got to really know what you're doing. If you're buying something, you better inspect it. You better have a professional inspect it. You know, whether it's the roof, whether it's the HVAC systems, whatever, the plumbing. You better make sure what you're buying is physically able to be utilized and rented out and operational. You better be really be careful of any, you know, there's all kinds of environmental reports you got to do. Make sure that the dirt's clean. You know, there's title issues. Make sure that, you know, you have a clear title and your property line is your property line. You got to make sure the physical structure is in good shape. And then when you get to the numbers, you really got to check. You got to make sure you know every penny that's coming in and every penny that's going out. And make sure that you're not forgetting anything.
Are you doing that personally, or who's doing that?
Well, my oldest son has really come a long way.
So you had the equity partners site up at least together with the two of you?
Yeah. You know, we pick everything apart.
Yeah.
And we've been in business so long, we kind of much know what it takes to run a place. And what we'll do is he'll come in day one. He just closed on a building. Back, he took over two apartment buildings yesterday. And as soon as he gets in there, he just trims the fat. You know, he knows that they're overpaying for the phone system. Mm-hmm. He knows that they're overpaying for the exterminating. You'd be surprised, all this stuff adds up. And keeping your costs down with the quality still up is the most important thing.
Well, now, with the amount of properties that you have, and even when you sell them, have you ever been tempted to go into build a fleet of services like pest control to just even service your own properties and make those?
Nah, you can't do everything in life. You're not going to be able to compete with a guy that's doing big business because he's going to give you the best price. It's just like, for instance, I always think about, you know, my landscaper wants to charge me $2,000 a month for this apartment building. Well, I could hire somebody probably for $2,000 a month and be a full-time landscaper at the property, right? Wrong. Because number one, he's only one guy. You're going to wear the poor guy out. It's hot as hell in here in Florida. You got to go out and buy the equipment. You have to maintain the equipment. You have to make sure you got gas and oil and insurance, and God forbid he cuts his hand off or falls out of a tree. And then you got chemicals that got to be used. It's not worth it. You hire a guy for $2,000 a month to come in once a week with 10 guys that do your property, and they come once a week, and that's the end of it. Same thing with pools. I could send my guy to school, learn how to clean a pool. Yeah, it's not brain science, but you get a pool company. You know, everybody's got to make money too. You know, that's what keeps the whole economy going here. The pool guy's got to make money. The landscaper's got to make money. Everybody, you know? So it's best to hire out the services to professionals that are licensed and insured, and that's the proper way of running a business. A lot of guys try to do everything themselves. They nickel and dime stuff, and all they do is cause themselves a lot of aggravation. In the long run, they don't save any money. Even laundry, believe it or not, we found out in some of our hotels, it's cheaper to send the laundry out, the sheets and everything, every day to a company than it is to have people working in a laundry room doing it ourselves with the chemicals and the people and the machines breaking down. We got a company that has a big factory that does, that's all they do. It ends up being cheaper in some of our hotels, not all of them, but some of them.
So most of your 600 employees are in the hotels?
Hotels require a lot of employees. You can run 200 apartments with two people working in the office and two maintenance guys, four people. To run a 200-room hotel, you'll need about 75. You got the desk clerks 24 hours a day. You got the bellman. You got the housekeeping. If you got a restaurant there, you got the cooks. You got the cleaners. You got dishwashers. You got the chef. You got the people in the sales department. Hotels are a lot of moving parts. They're very profitable if they're run right, but there's a lot of moving parts to them.
I want to get a little philosophical. And you came from New York, poor, and now you're not poor, and you're kind of at close to the top of the game here. With regard to the, you know, the trajectory of your life, what are you thinking about for legacy? What do you want to be remembered as? Obviously, your family is a big part of what you're—
That's why we do life for sale. You got something to remember me by.
So not only are you leaving your current persona, you're leaving your infinite persona in Danny's hands, is what you're saying.
Yeah, really, that's scary. But I mean, you know, if I drop dead tomorrow, I'd say, hey, at least I did some of my life. I came from not only being, it's one thing to be poor, but to come from a dangerous, horrible surroundings is really bad. You know, I mean, it was really bad growing up in parts of New York. I grew up back in the 70s and early 80s. If I do feel like things aren't going my way or if I'm unhappy, I just got to think back of when I was a little kid growing up in the slums of Far Rockaway and in the projects and all that and all the crap that I was exposed to and the violence and the murders and the killing, and it was horrible. I don't feel so bad. I just was in New York a couple of days ago. My wife forced me to go there. And I swear, as soon as we landed in Tampa Airport, I just felt like just so much weight went off of me. Being there was so frustrating that it was horrible.
So So besides the deal, I mean, you're obviously working deals and you're still hungry for that, for making deals and money.
I mean, we're doing deals, but we're being a little more choosy now. I've made some choices where I made money on deals, but then I said to myself, was it really worth it? Like one time I made a mistake, I went to Texas. We ended up doing okay there, but right now at the point where I'm at, I've worked hard enough for all these years, about 30 years in real estate, that the quality is important. It's like, I don't want my kids subjected to the stuff I used to have to do. I don't want them to be in dangerous places. I don't want to deal, you know, in other states. I want to keep it right here in Florida, close to home. I want to deal with, you know, decent assets, you know.
And I'm assuming money becomes less important, time becomes more important.
Exactly.
What are you doing with the extra time that you have?
I'm definitely trying to start living life, you know.
What does that mean?
Like, for instance, like my first two kids, they came from pretty rough times, me coming up, trying to make it. And now they're living good and doing good, but they're older now. When they were very young, I wasn't really there to support them like I wanted to, like I can now with my 11-year-old. See, like my 11-year-old now, this one takes up golf and he goes to the country club and he's got a different level of lifestyle that the other ones never had, which I think is actually good because he'll get his street smarts from me. But he also needs to know of a life that he needs to work towards having. I mean, there's nothing wrong with living good. I'm sorry to say. You know, last night, you know, everybody said, hey, where do you want to eat? I was taking a broker out. He showed me a shopping center. You know, hey, let's go to Charlie's Steakhouse. I don't care if the steaks cost $50 a head. You know, it's nice to live like that. I don't care what people say. I'd rather live with money than live without it. I don't abuse it and I don't, you know, waste it or, you know, I'm not conceited, you know, but it's definitely nice living with money than not having it. I mean, just look at Danny here. Danny eats Top Ramen every night.
I introduced you to Top Ramen.
Yeah, but he doesn't add nothing to it. It's just Top Ramen.
Yeah, that's all right.
No meat, no nothing.
All right, Ben, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's great.